Tim, you published a book this year, The Cure for Everything. What does the title mean? Where did it come from?
Well, the title is obviously meant a little bit tongue in cheek, a little bit ironic, and it's supposed to touch on this idea that we're always looking for the cure for everything, and we're always told that someone has the cure for everything, or that there's some answer, some simple answer out there for all of our health problems. And so I really wanted to investigate the whole area of health and all those sort of myths and promises that are made to us.
Well, you seem to focus in on health, diet, and exercise. What have you found there?
Oh, too much to say. It's funny because I found both just a huge amount of information and a huge amount of conflicting information. But at the same time, I found that the truth is actually very simple. You know, there are actually simple things that we can do that'll take us 95% of the way there to a healthy lifestyle. And that these simple things, by and large, with a few exceptions, have been known for decades. So there's all this noise out there about health, about what we should be eating, what kind of exercise we should be doing. There's all this noise out there. And by and large, you can ignore all of it and do a few simple things.
Well, I noticed that your cure seemed to be one paragraph on page 213. What are the 5 points? So let's just skip to the chase, right?
I don't want everyone to skip the whole book, but let's do that, right, just for fun. Yeah, you know, it's funny because people ask me, okay, so what is the cure? Well, you know, there is no cure. But I personally think that the evidence supports doing, you know, seven simple things. Number one, the obvious, don't smoke. Okay, don't smoke and drink in moderation, if at all. Number two, exercise. And by exercise, I mean doing real exercise. You know, that's real work, vigorous stuff, at least a couple times a week. And throughout the rest of the week, be active as much as you can. Number three, eat well. And people hate that. What the heck does eat well mean? Well, it's actually pretty simple. You follow the basic nutrition rules that you've heard forever. Eat lots of fruits and vegetables. I argue that 50% of what goes in your mouth should be a fruit or a vegetable. Eat whole grains, eat some lean protein, a little bit of dairy. And, you know, that's really the basics. That's the basics. All the other things about superfoods, and you can almost ignore all that. So where am I? I think that was number three. So number four is a tough one. And it's one that's really society struggling with right now, and that is, you know, maintain a healthy weight. And there's even some debate about how important that is versus being fit and eating well. I think that in general, the evidence says it is important that, you know, you should try to maintain a healthy weight. Don't eat too much. That is a challenge, but, we should at least strive for it. And the last one I have is that we should just sort of adopt all those basic kind of injury prevention things. Wear your seatbelt, wear a bike helmet. Those kinds of things. I actually don't talk that much about that in the book, but I think the evidence supports that. Almost everything else is either complete baloney or we're just fiddling at the margins. And by everything else, I include a lot of the high-tech stuff, like getting your genes tested, you know, taking supplements. Most of us don't need any supplements at all. You know, there's certainly sectors of society that need supplements, you know, pregnant women, perhaps some elderly have deficiencies. But in general, you don't need any supplements. And then the really bogus stuff like detoxification and colon cleanses and all. You just ignore all that and focus on these kind of principles. There are two other additional things I might, you know, slip into the mix that is sort of rising. I think the evidence is starting to support them, and that is sleep, getting your sleep, getting, you know, good 8 hours sleep. And the other one is tied to my being active, and that is not sitting too much and you know, trying to be mobile all the time. Perhaps we should stand during this interview at one point, but I think in general those five principles capture a lot of all we need to do.
Well, the thing that I noticed about this book is that it must have been an interesting journey for you because you decided if you're going to talk about these things, you'd better do them. What are some of the things that you did?
So I tried a whole bunch of different kinds of remedies. I went on a diet. And the interesting thing is, when I went on the diet, the goal was not to lose weight, because I really don't think we should focus on that. I really should think we should focus on, you know, healthy lifestyle. I always emphasize that over and over again. I know it's a cliche, but it's true. So I really was just going to focus on this, you know, healthy eating pattern. I didn't think I needed to lose any weight at all. And I was amazed at how heavy I was and how much, you know, body fat I was carrying. Now, I was well within sort of the average, but still I was surprised. And it's that obesity creep that happens to, I think, to everybody. You know, you put on a pound a year. I put on a pound a year after I graduated from university, which is so, so typical. But you know what? I've lost all that weight. I've kept it off, which is the key. And I think the trick is, as I said, is the lifestyle. Don't think of anything as a diet or some kind of fancy trick diet. You just got to adopt that healthy lifestyle.
Now, you even went so far as to go to Las Vegas and also to Hollywood to train with one of these personal trainers. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that's right. And it's somewhat, again, a little bit of a paradox that I did that because, as you'll see, as you know in the book, I really criticize this sort of sexy ab mentality that drives the fitness industry. You know, this, it's all about aesthetics. It's not about health. It's about aesthetics. And I really criticize that. So I went to Hollywood because I thought, you know, I'm going to go to the source of this image. I'm going to go to the source of this perspective on health. And I thought I'd get trained by Hollywood trainers. So, what do the Hollywood stars do to get fit? And, you know, I found that they work incredibly hard. So they're almost like the worst role models. First of all, they're obsessed with their looks. Number one. Number two, they've been gifted by the genetic gods the appropriate genes to have that particular look. In addition to that, they work like Olympic athletes to maintain it. Plus, they don't eat, right? And often they smoke and do other things that we probably should not be disclosing in order to maintain this look. So they're terrible role models for us. And so I thought it would be a great opportunity to go. It was a lot of fun. And Gina Lombardi, who trained me, was just a great sport. And she actually takes a very science-based, evidence-based approach to training. So I thought she'd be ideal. So it was a great way to end that chapter.
Well, the thing is with this book, it's not just focusing so much on the things you need to do or not do in order to become fit or maintain a healthy weight, but you're really looking at the science behind it, or the bad science, or what I liked was your perversion of science and the forces of that. What did you find there?
Yeah, as you know from the book, I'm a science geek, and I really wanted this to be science-informed. I wanted this to be, what does the evidence actually say about all these things? And I was interested in that, not just because I'm a science geek, but it really in my day job and in the work that's funded by Alberta Innovates, you know, that's one of the things I explore. I explore how is the evidence twisted? How are social forces twisting what we hear about health and about science? And there are many of them, you know, right from the commercial forces put on scientists, from the, you know, the career aspirations of science, from the media, right? You know, they have to put an interesting spin on it. Once it hits the market, there's another spin there. There are all these forces that are spinning what we're told. And so I wanted to both identify those forces and also sort of cut through them to get to the kernel of truth. And in addition to that, there's this underlying sort of theme that I hope the readers see, in that it is sort of a love letter to science and to the protection of good independent science and the need for liberal democracies to support that, you know, whether it's in the university or elsewhere. I think that good science has never been more important. So I hope that message comes out too.
Well, one of the quotes that caught my eye from one of the scientific experts is that as far as pharmaceutical companies goes, it seems like they're more interested in making the money rather than actually giving you a big health benefit. Is it this drive for the marketplace to make money that you think is behind all of this?
That's absolutely part of the story, and you know what? We can't blame them. That's what the market does. So sometimes it's interesting. I almost get frustrated when people say, oh, the pharmaceutical industry is evil and does this, or the fitness. Well, you know what? That's what the market does. So what we need to do is create processes and infrastructures and approaches that sort of protect the independents, so we have the best of both worlds, right? So we have, because, you know, we need the market. We live in a market society. We need industry and commercial forces to be involved in innovation. So what we need to do to balance that is make sure that we have the appropriate sort of independent sources of evidence and science in order to counter any kind of misinformation that's flowing from the market, whether it's the pharmaceutical industry, the fitness industry, the diet industry, or whatever. We need to have both sides of the equation.
Yet, how do people tell the difference? How do they know if they're being told, sold a bill of goods, or if they're really getting the real goods?
That, I think, is, you know, that's incredibly difficult. I think particularly in the fitness industry and the health and the diet industry, I think people already assume that Big Pharma is evil. And so anything that comes from there is evil. But it is hard because, those forces permeate everything, right? So, I say what you need to look for independent sources of information, and they're out there, things like the Cochrane Collaboration. Increasingly, the publications, the medical publications are trying to become more independent and to identify funding, etc. But in the fitness industry, it's sometimes even more subtle because you have these forces. Let's I identify yoga as a really good example. That is a huge industry. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. So these kinds of trends and these kind of forces, they get legs, they get momentum because people are making money, because they're selling huge amount of clothes and they're selling lessons. This is a big, so people have to be aware of those kind of forces everywhere, not just with pharmaceuticals, but also in the context of alternative medicine, in fitness, whether it's fitness products and fitness routines. It's that force is everywhere.
There is one section in your book, though, and this stands out for me, where you said, even though you can present people with the scientific facts, like the real facts, mm-hmm. They don't necessarily pay attention. It's what they believe. How did you come to that conclusion?
I came to it partly because I fell a victim to that myself. And that's another interesting theme. I say there are all these external forces twisting what we believe and what we hear. Well, there's also internal forces, right, that twist how we perceive things. First of all, there are these biases, right? First, it's something called the optimistic bias, this idea, belief that, the bad news, everyone's getting overweight and there's all these obesity problems out there, but that doesn't apply to me. And I fell victim to that, right? I always thought that I could eat whatever I wanted and I wouldn't have to worry about the health issues. So there, those kind of internal biases about the way we look, about what we eat, about how much we eat. So people have to be aware of those biases. In addition to that, people bring their own values to the table. So what often happens, and you see this with alternative medicine, for example, they seek out information, and this is completely natural. I'm not trying to be, I do it myself. You seek out sources of information that confirm what you already believe. And so I think what people need to do is be self-critical, always adopt sort of a skeptical tone. And people think of skepticism as a bad thing, as a negative thing. I don't at all. I think it is as positive and fun, right? And it nudges us a little closer to the truth.
In reading this book, I was really quite surprised because you're dealing with a very serious topic. And yet every page, I was laughing. It was hilarious. Why did you take this approach? Is that just the way you are?
I don't know. Well, I'm very glad that you had that reaction. I love that. I thought that, I wanted it to be engaging. I wanted it to be grounded in good science. I wanted it to touch on these important topics. And I wanted it to be fun. I was trying to combine those three things, and I was hoping it would make it somewhat of a unique book. There have been books that have touched on this before, so I hope that kind of combination would make it unique, and I'm glad. So I'm very glad you had that reaction.
Well, you really caught me with, I think it was on the second or third page, you were talking about the detoxifying dominatrix.
That's right.
And it just continued all the way through the book. What was the funniest thing that happened to you?
Oh, the funniest thing, I'll tell you what, I don't want to ruin it because it's almost a punchline, but I found I went on a cruise during the diet chapter, and it was the first time I'd ever been on a cruise, and it was a family vacation, and it worked out perfectly because where would be the most difficult place to try to maintain a diet, to maintain a healthy diet on one of these cruise ships where there is food available all the time, 24 hours a day, good food, fatty food, unhealthy food, alcohol, you name it, it's all there for at your fingertips. So that was a very funny experience for me, a very challenging experience. And as you'll see, as you know from the book, the end result was quite surprising.
So you did lose 25 pounds over the course of this. Have you managed to keep that off?
You know, I have managed to keep it off, which is amazing. I always say that it's all about lifestyle, right? And as you probably know, research tells us that, you know, it's easy, it's not really easy to lose weight, but the trick is, keeping it off. And most diets have, you know, depending on what research you look at, somewhere between 90 to 95% failure rate. You know, some have a little bit more success than that. But in general, all diets fail. And it's about, after about 2 years, there's a everyone puts the weight back on. And I think part of that is that people think of diet, 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 and they think when they achieve their goal, they can go back to eating a different way. You can't think that way. You have to think about lifestyle change. And almost the weight loss is secondary. And I think if people do that, you know, I know there are struggles, there are socioeconomic issues about eating healthy, there are family issues, there are a whole bunch of things that make losing weight and keeping it off challenging. But I do think that if you focus on lifestyle, it's easier to keep the weight off. And I found that it's become easier and easier with each passing month. We just went on, another family vacation, and I found it easy this time. It wasn't so hard.
So you finished up the book. You seem to be having a really great response from it. What has been some of the response, especially for some of these areas that you've trounced all over?
The response, I've been, you know, both honored and delighted how positive the response has been. I thought, you know, as you note, I do touch on a lot of controversial topics, and I hope I don't trounce on areas, but you're right. I do, you know, raise the skeptic's flag a couple of times, particularly around alternative medicine and a couple of other areas. I hope that because I treat those areas with respect and I try to understand why they're so popular and why they continue to thrive, that has deflected some of the potential criticism that could have been, yes, have I had some pushback? For sure. You know what community I got the most pushback from? The yoga community. So they were, now in the book, I don't really criticize yoga. In fact, the evidence says that yoga can be quite beneficial. It helps with stress levels and some evidence it helps with lower back pain and some other ailments. I just say that it's not a very efficient way to get physically fit. Yes, you can get physically fit doing it, but it's not necessarily the most efficient way to do it. And apparently you can't say anything bad about yoga without the yoga army coming out. So I did have to face a little bit of pushback from them, from that community. But in general, the response has been terrific.
Now, your book is published by Penguin. How did you get Penguin on board?
Well, the same way any writer tries to get a publisher on board. You know, they have been phenomenally supportive. Really, I'm honored to be associated with them. It's really any way that you try to work with a publisher that seems to have the same vision as you, and that's a good fit. And thankfully, it was Penguin for me.
What's your next book going to be?
I was working on it this morning, actually, right before I met you. I'm not going to say, but it does build on some of the same themes, but it goes off in a slightly different direction and a little bit broader in scope.
Thank you very much, Tim.
My pleasure. Thank you for interviewing me.